This podcast is a member of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts and content creators, visit bio.link/red5.
Hey there, kids and cadets. It's Tim from the FSF Popcast, and you're listening to the Scarif Podcast, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, it's Dragon Buddy, and you're listening to the Scarif Podcast. That's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're listening to the Scarif Podcast, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hey, this is Todd Hoffman from WSTR Galactic Public Access and Big T Little T Podcast. You're listening to the Scarif Podcast, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
Hello, this is Hondo Onaka. You are listening to the Scarif Podcast, and that's the Scuttlebutt. Okay, cut. Who has my credits? I must get going. I'm being chased by the Empire, after all.
Tune into the Scarif Scuttlebutt Podcast. Deep dives, geek talk, and an occasional butt. Only on the Red 5 Network.
I am not a bounty hunter. I've heard otherwise.
What is up, Scuttlebutt Nation? This is your friendly neighborhood Ro from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Podcast, and welcome to episode 188 this week. And just in case you guys are keeping track, next month is May. It's a very special day for us Star Wars fans, whether you celebrate it May the 4th or May 25th. I know I put out a poll. I was very disappointed that May the 4th won, but that's another story. but whether you celebrate, I think a lot of us Star Wars fans celebrate the entire month of May, which is really cool. So kudos to all of our Star Wars nerds. The month of May, we're going to be talking about Star Wars Episode One. The first episode drops next week, so that should be a lot of fun. And throughout the month, we're going to have Episode One, The Phantom Menace, discussions with various friends of the podcast from all across the Twitterverse. Tonight, we are going to be revisiting The Book of Boba Fett with our friend Tim from the FSF Popcast. And I have to say that slow because if you listen to the last time he was on, I had a little bit of a trouble. But Tim, how's it going tonight?
Good, Ro. Yeah, you survived the tongue twister.
Excellent, excellent. The Book of Boba Fett. But before that, I definitely want to talk to you a little bit about your recollection of Star Wars: The Phantom Menace. Our first episode next week is going to be with Scott Rifen. We're going to be talking about the hype. Do you remember the hype leading up to The Phantom Menace?
Oh yeah, very much so. Because so when The Phantom Menace came out, I was 21, almost 22 years old. My wife was pregnant. We had just had a baby a couple months prior. And it was actually the first movie that we took our son to.
Oh, wow.
And I remember leading up to it because I was very excited because my whole life up to that point had only been three Star Wars movies. And right. I'd only watched them only ever on VHS, take out one, put in the next, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it seemed like everywhere I looked, there was, you know, Star Wars toys here. There was, you know, this drive-through had something Star Wars, that drive-through had something Star Wars, you know, and George Lucas, who is the master of licensing Star Wars stuff off to everybody. Everybody seemed to have gotten a piece of it. Somebody was, you know, pimping something that was Star Wars. And I just remember it being everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Star Wars definitely was everywhere through the licensing that Pepsi had. And throughout all of its brands, you had Pizza Hut and KFC,
Taco Bell,
Yeah. So it was crazy Star Wars everywhere for sure. And I don't think that the hype has been so elevated. You know, we got a little hype obviously with The Force Awakens, but nothing has matched or surpassed the hype of Star Wars Episode One. I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, where did you see the movie when you first saw it?
So I live in West Michigan. And so the biggest cinema around us that was going to have it was in Grand Rapids, which is about 45 minutes away from where I live, because I'm a country boy. And so we drove 45 minutes into Grand Rapids and saw it at the Star 18, 18 screens. And we went and saw it there. And yeah, we sat towards the back of the theater. And actually, it was great because my son slept the whole movie, didn't make a single noise, which was not bad for a 3-month-old.
Sure. So. Yeah. Absolutely. That's great. That's great. I travel to the West Coast. I live not too far from you here in Chicago and the next state over. But yeah, I had a lot of fun in L.A. waiting in line at the Grauman's Chinese Theater. It was a lot of fun.
My bad.
Yeah, Star Wars Episode One, love it or hate it. We're going to be talking about that next month with some friends. So that should be a lot of fun.
That'll be exciting.
Yes, absolutely. You mentioned George Lucas, the master of marketing. I had put a question out there that I wanted to see if I can get your take on. What is it about George Lucas's films that makes the fact that we're still talking about Star Wars decades later? We still enjoy a good Indiana Jones movie. We are still, you know, more or less, if you dig deep, there's a lot of discussion online about THX-1138. I mean, these are movies that, you know, George had his hand in authoring these stories, these movies. American Graffiti comes to mind, obviously. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, because I posed this question to a couple of folks, and we'll read some of their comments in a bit, but what is it about George Lucas, do you think, that has made him kind of a staple in not only science fiction, but adventure, fantasy? You know, we can throw in movies like Willow, et cetera, et cetera. What is it about George Lucas that gives him that magical edge on his movies? What do you think?
I think he has a real simplicity to the way he attacks things. So if you look at Star Wars at its base, it's a simple story of good versus evil. Indiana Jones is a simple story of good versus evil. There's not a whole lot of different contexts or, you know, pretexts that are added into these things. So when you go to watch the movies and you sit down, you're enjoying a simple story with enticing characters. There's something redeemable about Indiana Jones and even though he's a bit of a jerk at times, let's be honest, you know, he can be, right? You know,
but
on the other hand, he's also fiercely loyal. He's, you know, he's patriotic. He's all these different things that we wanted to see as Americans, you know, that we would look for in a movie. And so there was all these things about his personality that would draw people in. So you had simplicity, but you had attractive characters. And it was the same thing with Star Wars. Star Wars is a very simple good versus evil story. You know, it's been, you know, since others have kind of put their fingers into it, there are other parts of the story that have been woven into it. And it's still at its base a story of good versus evil, a story of what happens when the wrong people get in power and all these different things along those lines. But there's attractive characters on both sides of the ball. You have good characters that are attractive and where people see something of themselves in those characters and they want to model themselves after those characters, like Luke and Leia and Han and Obi-Wan and things like that. And then you have your bad guys that you don't have a choice but to love, like Darth Vader, who is, for as evil as he is and all the things that he does, you love to see it when he comes on screen because you know something fun's about to happen.
Yes.
You know, and so with all those things attached, it makes for a good story because you're able to follow it through and yet identify certain parts of those story as possibly part of your journey, somebody else's journey, and really have an emotional tie-in.
Yeah, well said. I think you hit it on the head there. The simplicity of George's stories, you know, he doesn't leave them so complicated that you have to sit there and kind of muddle through the narrative to kind of relate to the story, relate to the characters. They're pretty simplistic. They're pretty relatable, and I think that is that's pretty much the big picture as far as why people connect to them.
Right.
Yeah, one of our followers, Megalithic Entertainment, says his wise command of the big picture, his creative approach enriched with knowledge of history, culture, philosophy, religion, mythology, art, and design, his fun visual style of timeless stories with depth, layers of meaning that offer valuable lessons about humanity. I think that kind of encompasses it all. A lot of people forget about some of the deeper notions that George is really an expert on, the whole mythology, art, design, philosophy, the history of humanity, and his interest, you know, growing up as a Northern California, you know, youth, and how he related to his father and his friends. We kind of see a semi, auto, you know, what do you call it? A semi biographical, story that is American Graffiti. What the hell is that? I'm trying to think of, autobiographical.
Autobiographical.
There you go. Yes. So, you know, it works on many levels. And I think, he has his, he's got that magic touch with a lot of those elements for sure.
I agree. I think there's a lot of what Monolithic said there that would be appropriate, because you have to look at how he encompasses other cultures and how heavily he relied on things like films by Kurosawa, and how he took some of the Japanese culture, the samurai culture, and put that into the way that the Jedi would face each other, and the use of the sabers, and even their approach, the robes, everything else. A lot of those things really shows that he is in touch with a lot of these other elements that would be able to be tied into the movie.
Absolutely. Our friend Nick from Nick Flicks Podcast.
Nick.
Oops, sorry. Hold on a second. I screenshot and he's up at the top, but that wasn't his.
We'll save that Nick for later.
Yeah, yeah.
I retract my Nick.
Yeah, totally. our follower, the comic awareness, he says he was smart in that his stories reworked and repackaged classic tropes and timeless myths that had been successful in their universal appeal for generations. I think, we talk about the repackaging of classic tropes, but I think one can say that these are definitely timeless stories, simplistic stories, as you said, but they work on such a level that they are universal. They do appeal to a lot of people throughout the generations, throughout, sure. Across age gaps, across ethnicities. I think the aspect of these adventure stories are definitely universal. Another one of our followers, Both Coast 25, boundless imagination, awe-inspiring imagery, universal emotions, iconic mythological conceits that have roots in every culture, an old story told in a new, one-of-a-kind way, just the perfect mix of sweeping escapism and grounded relatability that hits us right in our souls. I think that says it all.
That's a pretty powerful statement, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good
one.
Thank
you, guys. Yeah, absolutely. So if you see me post out a question of the week, please, give us some interaction. We love reading those posts on future shows. So that's a lot of fun. Thank you guys for bringing that to our attention and relating to our answering our question and interacting with us. Thank you so much, guys. All right. Let's get down to the main topic. You had decided to accost me online and say, hey, let's talk about the Book of Boba Fett. Which is absolutely fine. I think I love it when my followers message me and say, hey, I got an idea. Let's do this. Let's do that. But it's always fun to interact with you, Tim. You are a wonderful follower, an awesome co-conspirator from time to time when we get together and do our shows.
Absolutely.
And obviously, you know, you and your team are great as well. But why is it that you wanted to talk a little bit about Book of Boba Fett?
I think the Book of Boba Fett was given the Kobayashi Maru, to use a Star Trek term here. It was put in a no-win situation. There was no way that no matter what happened with this episode, you know, this series, unless it came out from episode 1 to episode 6 or 8, whatever, I don't remember how many, off the top of my head, how many episodes there were. But unless he was, you know, kicking ass and taking names from opening credit to end credit, people were not going to be happy with this series. Hmm. And any opportunity that Lucasfilms and Disney were going to take to show any backstory, anything else, was going to be pretty well panned and hit hard. And I think that's pretty much what happened. We'll get into this more in a little bit, but there's a few things that they could have done to help themselves not get smacked in the mouth as hard as they did in some areas. I'm looking at you, slow speeder chase through the center of town.
That's one of many.
Oh yeah, that's one of many. Yeah, there's a lot of things that we can talk about. There's a lot of highlights throughout this series, a lot of things that I really did enjoy, and things that I thought, man, this is a really good building block to the Boba Fett story. Because from the point of his supposed death in Return of the Jedi up until now, we had no Boba Fett. We had really no backstory from Return of the Jedi until the prequel era as to where Boba came from, what he was, all these different things. We had no knowledge. All we knew is that he was a bounty hunter, and supposedly he was the best in the galaxy, and that Vader was afraid that he would disintegrate anything that moved. And so that was all we really knew. And so we went into, I think, especially after the prequel era, watching Django and who he'd come from, and watching all the clone troopers who would be his, you know, clone brothers. Mm-hmm. And all the things that they were capable of. We see Captain Rex. We see him doing all these really cool things and all stuff like that. We had it in our minds that the second that hand shot through the sand, he had to be that badass. And that was all that was going to be acceptable. And I think that there was 40 years of people waiting for that hand to come back up through the sand, and that's all it could be.
Yeah, I think I would have to agree with you. And especially when we get, where was it that we saw kind of a little bit of an epilogue? The last season, the previous season, I guess, before the release of the Book of Boba Fett show, where we see Boba Fett, you know, march into Jabba's palace and take care
of the Mandalorian.
Right. Take care of Bib Fortuna, kills him in cold blood, takes his seat. Fennec Shand comes and sits next to him and drinks a little of that Romulan ale that Jabba had laying around. Mm-hmm. That was it. That was, they had set the stage for what we thought was going to be, an awesome, Boba Fett, series, you know, going into it. So
for him to walk through the door, kick through the door and be like, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubble gum and I'm all out of bubble gum.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So, you know, besides the 40 years of fan speculation, I think that also kind of helped, feed that notion. But I want to I want to go back and you mentioned a building block of Boba Fett. And I wanted to ask you why you think Boba Fett as a character remained so ingrained in fans' minds. And I know I've heard some people say that some people basically declared that Boba Fett was a boring character. He was nobody. He showed up in The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi and died miserably. Ho-hum, who cares? Let's move on. But for some reason, I would venture to say that the majority of fans who grew up with the original trilogy really connected with Boba Fett as a character, even though that he was a mysterious character. He was kind of an outlaw, you know, working with the Empire from time to time, as we can surmise. I'm not going to get too much into the expanded universe stuff, but there was a little bit of a history of Boba Fett as a badass. And I know a lot of fans couldn't wait to see that in live action form. But what are your thoughts on the character of Boba Fett pre-Book of?
Well, you have, you know, like I said, we talk about just the main original trilogy. We see him in Empire. We see him in Return of the Jedi. He has very, very little screen time. Just a few lines here and there. And the only thing that we get to really see is this guy who looks really cool. He's got these rockets on his arm. He's got this jetpack. He's got this really cool kind of arm holstered gun. And, you know, just, you know, this cool helmet. He just looks cool. We have no idea what any of this stuff means. At that time, there was no concept of Mandalorians, who the Mandalorians were, what the Mandalorians were, anything along those lines. So there was no reason for us to have any expectation about anything along that line. But so it was just more of a thing that this guy, here's a guy that was cool. And watching him on the screen, there was the idea of the potential of what that could be and how that could be, I think, moving forward. And I think for me as a kid, that's what always kind of drew me to Boba Fett, was that there was the potential of this really cool character. And I wonder what he could have been. Because he had jetpacks, he had rockets, he had the fire, he had the rope that would shoot out and lasso around people, and all these different things. He was like a Star Wars Batman, for lack of a better term. Sure. You know, and not that he was like, you know, I mean, it just because he had all these different gadgets and all these tools and he could do all these things. And you know, and so for that, for me, was how I saw him. But then you move past that. You talked about the EU stuff. There's all that. There was stuff in comic books. You got to play as Boba Fett in different Star Wars video games, and you know all these things. As you know, as you go from being a young man in the 80s and 90s and grow up, and you're reading the books, you're looking at the comics, you're playing the video games. Up to the point where he gets to come back to screen, and then you see him, you know, all these things in the Clone Wars and the prequels. Yeah, the hype is going to grow and build as it goes, because, you know, you have this bubble that just keeps getting, you know, like it's like a balloon. It just keeps getting filled with water and water and water. And it keeps growing and growing and growing until it gets popped, and, you know, until it's, you know. And I think that's what happened when we got to the point of the Book of Boba Fett. That's when the balloon popped. You know, it doesn't mean that people lost their love for Boba Fett. I think that there was a tremendous amount of dismay and disconnect from what they had perceived the character to be, because who they had installed Boba Fett in their hearts and minds as, versus the reality of what was being put forward now as canon.
Boba! Mitinka hacking puta! Open our feet, what kind of Malian teeth be?
Sure, and I was talking to a couple of people online regarding the how the story kind of played out, how it ended up being, you know, the whole found family with the Tusken Raiders, et cetera, et cetera. Which we will definitely talk a little bit more in detail later on. But I wanted to ask you, just to kind of get some cool stuff right off the bat here. Book of Boba Fett introduced some really interesting characters, some really cool characters, some not so cool characters, but we'll get to that. What were some of your favorite new characters that were introduced in the Book of Boba Fett?
Now, I know he was in the comics, but new to me was Black Chrysanthemum, the yes. Wookiee.
I call him Special K.
Special K, that's right. Special K will whoop you, no two ways about it. As soon as he came on screen, as soon as Black Chrysanthemum turned the corner and started growling, I was like, oh, this is going to be cool.
Sure.
So I really enjoyed Black Chrysanthemum, and I liked getting to know Fennec Shand a little bit more.
Sure.
Even though it was a character that we've seen through animation, this was, you know, getting to see her in live action and getting to see Ming-Na Wen play her and bring that character to life to me was something a little special. And I thought it was kind of, you know, we'll get into this more. I think with some of your other questions you had laid out, but I also enjoyed seeing the Tusken Raiders. I enjoyed seeing the Tusken Raiders as being more than the guys that just stand on top of the hills and, you know, being able to see a little bit of their culture and how they do what they do, why they do what they do, because I'm the type of guy that I like to see how people, you know, what makes people tick, why mm-hmm. they do the things that they do, who they are, why they are. And so for me, seeing that with the Tusken Raiders was really very cool. Was it 3 episodes worth of content necessary? No, but I did enjoy that aspect of it.
Hey friends, just a quick reminder, if you enjoy our content and don't want to commit to a Patreon tier, you can show your love in other ways.
Oh yeah.
Of course, you can take advantage of our merchandise store at TeePublic, where we've got cool designs from all across the Red 5 network. Look for sale announcements and save up to 30 to 35% on all our merchandise.
Oh, nice.
And there's also a very convenient way to help support the channel. As you know, coffee is our friend. It keeps us going. You can show your appreciation by heading over to buymeacoffee.com/scarif.
buymeacoffee.com/scarif.
Any amount starting at $5, a one-time treat for us to help with all the stuff it takes to maintain the quality you deserve. And remember, it's always sunny on Scarif, and that's the Scuttlebutt. And pass the cream, please.
Where'd you get that water?
We stole it.
That's a crime.
It's a crime what he charges.
Then farm your own water.
Look, old man.
My name is Boba Fett.
One of the things that you mentioned, it was nice to see the character of Fennec Shand fleshed out a little bit more. Like you said, we've seen her in the animated shows. She appears in some comic books, et cetera, et cetera. But I almost felt like if we're going to – I'll touch a little bit on character and story here. But I almost felt like Fennec Shand was what Boba Fett should have been in this series. Fennec would not take any BS from anybody. She went full forward, didn't mess around, didn't ask questions. She fired first and asked questions later. That's what kind of I expected Boba Fett to be a little more like. Boba Fett was a little more reserved when it came to his character, which really threw me off. You talk about character motivations. I definitely have some notes regarding character motivation, especially as we get to the, when we start discussing towards the end of the series there. But those are some of the things that really disappointed me in the series. And again, we'll get, you know, deep into the whole found family Tusken Raider thing.
I actually have some thoughts about your comment there about Fennec Shand and being in the Boba.
Sure, yes, go ahead.
Being in the Boba role. Because I do agree with you about that. She is more in the Boba role at that point. But getting it back into the character motivation point, I think it has mostly to do with the fact, and the way I viewed it from watching the series a couple different times, is that I almost feel like when we start the series, we're seeing Boba with almost like a new lease on life. Like, here he is. He realizes that he could have, should have been dead. Had it not been for his armor, he would have been done. Right. So I think he was trying to approach things in a kinder, gentler, less Boba Fett way. And I think that's what we're seeing through the first few episodes. And then at the very last of the episode, the final episode, you know, Boba looks at Fennec and says, maybe this life isn't for me, you know, or something along those lines. I don't remember exactly how it was said, but it kind of indicating that maybe he just needs to go back to his old ways because this way wasn't working. Yeah. And so I think that what we were seeing in this throughout this series was a new lease on life, Boba, trying to figure out if doing things a different way would have resulted in a different style of life than what he had gotten to and gone through up to that point. And, you know, by the end of it, I think they had put him back to where he was supposed to be.
And that's funny because that line at the end of that last episode, when he turns to Fennec and says that, was so frustrating to me, and I'm assuming to a lot of fans, because even Cad Bane told him, like in the middle of the series, that you seem to have softened up a little, Fett.
I've known you a long time, Bobo. One thing I can't figure. What's your angle?
This is my city. These are my people. I will not abandon them.
Like the Tuskens.
And I think that's what the entire audience was saying at that time. And then for him to say it at the end of the series, I almost felt like a collective group of all the fans just raised their hands and said, that's what we've been trying to tell you, Boba, which I thought was funny. And I think that adds to my frustration, because I think, you know, I definitely wanted to see Boba Fett. Whether he was acting like I wanted him to act because of all the mind canon or whatever, the head canon, or not, I just, you know, one of the things that tosses me out of specific series and storylines is when the character motivations don't make sense to me. And I think a lot of what happened in this series went along with that. And again, something that happened at the end of the series definitely was like the last straw for me. But I do want to talk about some of my favorite characters. Special K, you mentioned, he was fantastic. He was a highlight of the series. Although I think he probably should have beat the crap out of the Vespa kids when he was attacked. So that was like,
Realistically should have killed Boba when he pulled him out of the back to tank.
Sure. Garza Fwip, played by the very lovely Jennifer Beals. She was an intriguing character.
Yes.
For various reasons.
Too bad there's many bits of her now.
But you know what? Nobody ever dies in Star Wars. So crossing
my fingers. Nobody, no death.
Nobody, no death. Yes. You know, the role played by Timothy Olyphant, Cobb Vanth, was I think he was a favorite of a lot of people.
Really enjoyed him.
And I really enjoyed him too. I'm going to ask you this question because I posed this to some folks on Twitter a while ago. Do you think that the producers of the show dove too far into the Western trope, or do you think it was just right?
That's a very good question, because there were some episodes where I thought, well, okay, they're taking the howdy ma'ams and everything like that a little too much, because that's never really been a part of Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars is a space Western. Don't get me wrong. It's space opera, space fantasy, space Western, all those things kind of one big gumbo. And I get that. But it's never been the hayseed in the mouth, a flick of the hat. How you doing, ma'am? You know, howdy, ma'am. Howdy, sir. You know, that kind of thing. And I like Timothy Oliphant's character. Cobb Vanth is a really cool dude. And I want to see more of him on screen, but I would like to see a little bit of the Westernness of it toned down to the Mandalorian level of Western, because that's what the Mandalorian is. The Mandalorian is very much a spaghetti Western in space. And I think that they just took that platform that they had built for the Mandalorian and went, oh, well, we could do the same thing over here with Book of Boba Fett, but we're going to ramp it up a little bit. I think they need to ramp it back down, bring it back down a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I remember reading some industry articles regarding Disney being apprehensive about having two shows that dealt with a Mandalorian. They didn't want to confuse the audience. They said, we can't have the Mandalorian and Boba Fett. And it's too bad, because I think they are in it almost seems like an insult to the fans that if they think that they can't have, you know, these two characters on at the same time. Obviously they got together. They teamed up towards the end throughout the series. Nobody got confused at that.
Hey, if we can look at a field of clone troopers and tell the difference between
Captain
Rex and Commander Cody, yeah. I think we're good to go.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you something, because this is a very controversial group of characters, the Vespa kids and their shiny scooters. I know the one character got a lot of flack for spinning in slow motion and being all semi-cool.
Oh, the spinning shot, yeah.
The character's name is Scad. We had also Sophie Thatcher playing Drash. I actually kind of enjoyed Drash as a character. I think if they continued with the series, Drash would have turned into someone kind of interesting in that group. I don't know. I know people complained about her zippers, because there's no zippers in Star Wars, but that's another podcast. So those are some of my favorite characters. I don't know what the hell was going on with those beefcake Gamorrean guards, but what'd you think of those?
The dad bods. Yeah, the dad bod Gamorreans. Well, first things first, I didn't mind the kids with all the different apparatuses that they had, you know, mechanically added in, because that was supposed to be part of what was cool and going on in their town. And, you know, that's, you know, again, that's even with Fennec, that's how she stayed alive, because they, you know, they were able to, you know, manipulate her organs with mechanics. I don't know. I didn't think that they were. I think that the way that they were kind of brought into the story and then kind of used through the story, they were pointless at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were made it sound like they were going to be, you know, working there for Boba, doing all these things, but yet they were just kind of like there.
Sure.
You know, it's hard for me to really put into words the, you know, what I'm trying to say here. I just think that if you're going to put these kids on screen, you're going to give them these roles, these characters, and make it seem like they're going to be, they needed more screen time to make themselves more important. They needed to actually have quality lines other than, you know, then why don't we just work for you? Or so whatever the line was where Drash was talking with Boba.
Mm-hmm.
You all should be working.
There is no work, mighty Daimyo. Look around you.
Then you will work for me.
There was a lot of lack of quality when it came to how these characters were used. I guess that's probably my biggest complaint right there. We'll go with that. Is that there's a lack of quality when it came to how these characters were used, how they were shown on screen, how they fought Mr. I Spin in a Circle. Any other time, that dude's dead. I swear to God, that dude's dead. Any other movie. he shot 7 times in that spin. And, you know, even with their chases, with their KitchenAid looking scooters,
Exactly. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I'm usually a fan of Robert Rodriguez movies. We have Alita: Battle Angel, which was really awesome.
Yeah.
Still looking forward to hopefully a sequel soon. They set it up really nice. I have been a fan of Robert Rodriguez since El Mariachi. The film series that encompasses that world. I think he is a talented independent filmmaker. It's almost like he does better when he has less resources. You know, Star Wars, obviously, I'm assuming that if you are, you know, if you're lucky enough to direct anything Star Wars, you know, not that money is no object, but obviously, you know, you get the cream of the crop when it comes to resources. You know, obviously the Vespas and all that stuff, the special effects looked a little on the cheesy side, the slow chase, you know, in town, would, you know, looked a little weird. But again, I think those are elements that are part of Robert Rodriguez's style of guerrilla filmmaking. Didn't work in this case, for me anyways, but you know, they gave him a chance. He did what he did, and you know, who knows if he'll be back to do any more Star Wars or a second series there.
I don't even really have a problem with the multicolored Vespas. I thought they were kind of cool looking, you know, especially because all the mirrors and things were kind of a throwback to the 1960s era in England, when, you know, all the kids who were riding their actual Vespas in London would put all these additional mirrors. The more mirrors you had, the cooler you were. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a cool knockback to that. I have no problem with that. I had a problem with just the use of the CGI and how fast the machines were shown going through town. So if they would have actually sped those scenes up to where I didn't look like I could have crab crawled faster
right.
than the machines, I think it would have been fine. So I tease about the Vespas, but in all reality, I don't have a problem with the KitchenAid machines. I just want them to go. It's Star Wars. These things are jet powered or fusion powered or however they're powered.
Right.
Power them. Go fast.
Yeah. I could almost hear George Lucas just going up to Robert Rodriguez and say, faster and more intense, please.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
This is Sentry Mode.
Okay, folks, that jingle is back. You heard it, and it's time for Sentry Mode, our five-question Star Wars trivia segment. We put some friends on the spot to answer questions from all across the galaxy, and this time I've drafted Josh from the Trash Compactor Podcast. How goes it, sir?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for having me, bro.
This is going to be a lot of fun. So we usually formulate questions from not just Star Wars, but other franchises and nerd IPs. But tonight we've got a special set of questions curated just for you. Five questions to test and flex your Star Wars knowledge and demonstrate your knowledge and conviction as a Star Wars fan. Sir, are you ready?
I better be. Otherwise, I might have to turn in my Star Wars podcast host card.
Yes, get it ready. Get it ready. But yeah. I'm going to, you know, there's a couple of softballs in here. So we'll see what happens. Here we go. Sentry Mode, question number one. What does AT-AT stand for?
All-Terrain Armored Transport.
That is correct. Oof. All right. So question number two, the original six Star Wars films were released in which month?
May.
And what is the significance of May?
George Lucas's birth month, I believe.
That is correct. Correct. Excellent. All right, question number three. In Return of the Jedi, despite having the credits say that Jabba the Hutt played himself, how many people did it take to operate Jabba?
Okay, well, this is there were three who were inside Jabba, I believe. And was there a fourth that was operating the eyes? I'm going to say four.
Four? Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
Josh says four. The archives say six. The puppet fit three men inside, two to operate the arms, head, and tongue, and another to move the tail. And there was a man lying below the puppet pulling the strings to move Jabba's yes. mouth and make him kind of jostle around when he was laughing boisterously.
I should have remembered that scene in From Star Wars to Jedi. I was like, I was trying to furiously rewind the tape in the old theater of the mind there. But
yeah, and you know what? And it's funny because that is one scene that I completely remember. It's ingrained in my mind. The British puppeteers and that one shorter fellow that was kind of in the tail. One thing that he said that just was just recorded in my brain is when he jostled the tail control and he said backwards and forwards.
That's so funny you say that because that is stuck in my brain. And I actually have another an old friend of mine, Bracey, who's a frequent guest on Trash Compactor. That was one of the things that we bonded over because we would just say, you know, backwards and forwards. And we knew what the other was talking about.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's so bizarre. But yeah, that makes sense that it would also stick in the craw of other people. I don't think that man knows how famous he actually was.
Right, yeah. Question number four on Sentry Mode. During production, what was the original working title of the first Star Wars film? And extra points if you can give me the entire title.
Okay. Well, I know for a time it was called The Star Wars, but I think what you're looking for is... from the... Adventures of Luke Starkiller, Saga 1, The Star Wars, Journal of the Wills is in there somewhere. there were many, headings and subheadings, as I recall, but...
I think you got most of the words, maybe in a slightly different order, but I will slightly give different. It to you. Yes, it was Adventures of Luke Starkiller, as taken from the Journal of the Wills, Saga 1... The Star Wars.
Okay, it's pretty close.
Very close.
Given that mouthful of words, I think I got pretty close.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Excellent. That is a mouthful. All right, question number five, and I think you're home free here. But what is the cell number of Princess Leia on the original Death Star?
Well, 2187. You go and get her. I'll hold him here. It's in cell block 1138.
That's correct. Yeah. That is correct. Cell 2187. And I'm sure that is every Star Wars nerd's ATM password.
No joke. It is mine, which I now have to change.
There you go. I knew it. All right, so I got a bonus question for you before we sign off. What is George Lucas's first movie based on a short film he did in college?
Oh, I see what you're doing here. that would be THX 1138, a feature film based on a short student film, as you said. And you are actually... the guest on the next episode of my podcast, Trash Compactor.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if you knew that or not. Wherein we discuss at length THX 1138. That episode is going to drop on Tuesday, May 7th.
Very nice.
And it was a wonderful discussion. I think, we were discussing earlier, I think a lot of conversation that happens around THX 1138 is in relation to how it relates to Star Wars, right? But I feel like you don't very often get conversations that just deal with THX 1138 on its own as a standalone movie.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun, a conversation, and it was really fun to get to chat with someone new who has such a wealth of knowledge about not just Star Wars, but also George Lucas and his other works. So it was a really great conversation. So thanks again for doing that.
I definitely had fun. And again, you know, besides Star Wars, I'm, you know, again, you know, really into George Lucas's, his method, his, you know, the iconography of his filmmaking, all of the wonderful pieces of work that he is responsible for, you know, Indiana Jones, obviously Star Wars, American Graffiti. It's just a wealth of wonderful stories that that he has shared with the world. And I'm glad that we had that discussion, that episode. Looking forward to listening to that many times over. So thank you very much for inviting me on that one. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you for inviting me on your show. This is a lot of fun.
Yes, yes, sir. Sentry mode. So, Josh, do you have anything else to push? Anything else going on in the life of a trash compactor?
Well, just at the moment, we have our current episode is an episode about the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles TV series with two guys who host a podcast, the Young Indie Chroniclers. That is the first, to my knowledge, serious examination of the behind the scenes and history of the making of that show. And it's a wonderful podcast. And I had a really, really fascinating discussion with them. And just really quick, the episode before that, I spoke to the famed Star Wars archaeologist, Dr. David West Reynolds, about his experience as the co-editor of the first teaser trailer for Star Wars Episode One. And that was a fascinating discussion. So if you're curious about either one of those, you can find us at trashcompod.com and trashcompod on YouTube, and our show's available wherever you get podcasts.
Excellent. Excellent. Looking forward to that. Yeah, it's another one of my favorite things. When Star Wars was gearing up to come to television, you know, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, I think that was kind of a training ground for the production team and George Lucas. But here we are. Star Wars is all over the place, as they say. And yeah, that is the scuttlebutt. Josh, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Sentry Mode. We're going to go back. We're talking about the Book of Boba Fett. And let's see if Tim and I are friends anymore, because I think we've had a really great discussion so far. Nobody's poked an eye out, but let's continue the discussion on the Book of Boba Fett. Until next time, Josh, we'll see you at the THX 1138 Film Festival. That actually would be nice. I would go to that.
I would too.
An incoming transmission from the Scarif Scuttlebutt Hotline, Commander, and we can't withstand a voicemail of this magnitude!
Hey, Ro, and fellow Scuttlebutters? Yes, that's it. This is Amanda calling, and I saw the question that Ro had up on his Twitter for Scarif about which era of Star Wars we would want to live in and why, and I would have to say my favorite era of all Star Wars is the Old Republic. I love the conflict between the Jedi Order and the Sith Empire and that whole, you know, rise and fall of the Jedi versus the rise and fall of the Sith. I know it's really turmoil-y and full of chaos and war, but to me it's just so interesting. You get so many unique characters with their own agendas. The Jedi are very unique. The Sith, of course, are unique with all their different agendas and conniving ways and everything. So yeah, it would be the Old Republic. Plus, let's be honest, the lightsaber battles in the Old Republic era were epic. Probably some of the best you'll see. All right, well, that's the Scuttlebutt. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Greetings, Scuttlebutt Podcast, and hello there from KS Geekman. Hey, I wanted to leave a note about my thoughts on what I liked about The Book of Boba Fett. While I'm not a fan of the show itself, I will say this. I loved that Temuera Morrison was reactivated in the Star Wars franchise. Seeing him on the screen as Boba Fett was awesome. And him just being a part of fan celebrations and those kinds of things, he has just always been a great ambassador, I think, from Star Wars personalities to Star Wars fandom. And it was just great seeing him a part of Star Wars again. You could see how much he loves it. You can see how much he appreciated being a part of the franchise again, and I hope they do more with him. I mean, he's got the opportunity. Come on, what an amazing talent agent he had to set him up as a clone so he could appear in thousands of episodes of whatever Star Wars show they do, if they continue to at least stay within the OT and prequel trilogy era. Anyways, love you guys, and love the podcast. Thanks.
Hey, Ro and Brad. This is Todd Hoffman from WFTR, Galactic Public Access, and Big T, Little T, a Star Wars podcast. Recently, you tweeted about the Book of Boba Fett and how can we make it better or what happened. And I think it all was dependent on time. I just didn't think they spent enough time to really develop the Book of Boba Fett the way it should have been. And also in the episodes, I just felt like you had plenty of time to tell a story and just a weird number 7 of episodes. It's like you could have spent a whole episode on him just getting out of the Sarlacc pit and done kind of like a Dante Inferno and just like the different levels of the Sarlacc and make it more like a horror type picture. But they just spent 2 minutes and he's out and there's a random stormtrooper and it just doesn't make sense. Because there's no stormtroopers when he fell into the Sarlacc pit. But I digress. I just think where Boba Fett is perfectly introduced as a side character in The Mandalorian and in that time frame, I felt like they didn't spend enough time with Boba Fett, and he's mostly a side character in his own story. And I think that's just a disservice to him. And then really the best episode of the Book of Boba Fett has nothing to do with Boba Fett, has everything to do with Mando and Grogu and Luke Skywalker and all those things. So again, not that Boba Fett can't interact with other characters. I think that's obviously okay. It just should be more prevalent about the Book of Boba Fett. And they went too many times in the well with the flashback. Love flashbacks, but you don't have to be in a box of tank every time to have a flashback. So those are some of my little gripes. I mean, the Book of Boba Fett, Boba Fett is my favorite character in Star Wars, but I felt like it didn't enhance the character as much as like Mando and, you know, like that is really some good character development. I just don't think they did that. And it was almost like, well, we need to tell more about Mando, but then we can't tell more about Book of Boba at the same time. It just felt like it was disjointed. So those are my things. Hopefully, you know, they can learn from it. But it is what it is. It's already published. It's in the books. But still love Boba Fett. Still love Star Wars. Still love Disney Plus. Maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, just wish they took a little bit more time on that. And that's the Scuttlebutt. Bye.
Hey, Star Wars fans and friends of the podcast, don't forget to leave the guys a voicemail for a chance to be included in the discussion. Let them know what's on your mind. Call 773-234-8659, and that's the Scuttlebutt.
Oh.
Okay, folks, it's time to tell you about our patrons, wonderful people that support the Scare of Scuttlebutt podcast through our Patreon page. First up, we got Nicholas Schaefer. You may know him by his professional name, Backyard TARDIS. Don't forget, he's got a YouTube channel, Adventures in Locksmithing. If you think rekeying is all he does, well, head on over to his channel and prepare for the fun. And we can't forget our executors here, Scott and Kim of the Used and Abused podcast, along with Nicole. Peace, love, and fandoms. Join this Red 5 pod in the chat whenever they go live for fun and shenanigans. Take the jump to hyperspace to our Garrison tier. Big thanks to The Frank, longtime supporter and resident Back to the Future expert. Why don't you log in and say hello? What's up, Frank? And we've got Melanie Marquita. I love saying her name.
Melanie Marquita.
Big hugs to you, my friend. One of my favorite collaborators. All right, we got comics and cosmetics. Danny, licensed super nerd. Her YouTube channel's got the latest nerd news and some incredibly well-researched tidbits on comics and cosmetics. Go give her a sub. Big shout out to Alex the Salty Nerd himself. Big thanks. And someone who brings joy to my timeline, Belinda. So glad you're on our list. A heartfelt thanks to my friend Greg at Rebel Base Card. So much card knowledge. Go give him a follow. I also want to say thanks to some of our other special followers like Vader Rapina and Rennie. And of course, I'd like to think that this follower was the show's first follower, Ali K and family. Thank you guys for your support. Big thanks to all our patrons and friends of the podcast. If you're interested in helping to keep us going strong around here and get some exclusive Scarif swag and content,
head on over to patreon.com/scarifscuttlebutt.
Remember, we can't have the scuttle without the butt.
Hello?
Hi, this is Sean from Extra Star Wars.
Oh.
And you're listening to the Scarif Scuttlebutt.
I knew you were waiting for this because you and I talked online about a certain bait and switch, but I think we covered it for the most part. And I, you know, I remember you tweeting the fact that you really wanted to discuss the bait and switch, but I think we talked about it early on. You know, we get a sense of Boba Fett that is a badass. He takes no prisoners. He goes in, waltzes into Jabba's palace, shoots Bib Fortuna, takes the throne. Wow. You know, everybody rises to applaud because we're going to be getting a show about this guy right here. Awesome. Rah, rah, rah.
Right.
And then we get, and then we get the series, and he's all touchy-feely with the Tusken Raiders. He's got this found family. He doesn't want to shoot anybody. He's rules the sands of the streets of Tatooine with kindness. And I'm like, where is Boba Fett? What's going on?
Right.
That was one of my biggest, like, oh, you get on with it. And I know, again, I posted the question regarding the Tusken Raiders. A lot of people obviously, you know, liked that aspect of his character. They liked the growth of, you know, him being a mean ass and finding his family. I know Star Wars, a lot of Star Wars lately has been, you know, found family heavy. I personally think they're going too heavy on the found family. I want to get back to adventure, all the things that Jedi are not supposed to crave for. But
right.
So those are my thoughts about the bait and switch. And I wanted to ask you, do you feel like my opinion has some sort of validity to it? What are your thoughts on the bait and switch?
Well, when we talked about it online, I was more curious as to what you meant by bait and switch. But now that I understand what you mean by bait and switch, I think you're accurate. So here's the deal. You know, we have these 8 episodes or 6 episodes, whatever it was, of Boba Fett. We have a pacing problem in the stories. So what happens, we have, like you said, he comes in, he shoots up the place, he's King Boba Fett. He should be walking down the street, you know, and Fennec Shand, excuse me, I'll get it right one of these days. Yeah. Keep like trying to remind him.
It's like saying FSSF podcast, what?
Exactly. Yeah. And Fennec keeps trying to remind him that, hey, all these people are, you know, they should be fearing you. And he's like, no, I want them to like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that... that between that and then what we saw with the Tusken Raiders, that's why I was like, well, I think this is where he's coming from, this newfound feeling on life. And he got this found family, and he's trying to repay all the good that was done to him. And I think that's where they were kind of trying to go with it. But, you know, there's that thing where, you know, you have too much of a good thing. It's like when you eat your dinner, you put a little bit of salt, you put a little pepper on it, because that improves the meal, improves the taste. But you could also put too much of it in.
Sure.
And I think that's what happened in the Book of Boba Fett. I think the backstory is important to Boba Fett, knowing how he came out of the pit, knowing how he got saved by the Tusken Raiders, showing him, you know, going through. It could have been very short snippets. They didn't have to have a whole episode about him going out through the sands and killing the beast and bringing back the water gourd and all these different things. Those could have been very truncated pieces of the story. Instead, what you have is you get fan frustration, because now you've got these things that should have been truncated and down to one, maybe an episode and a half, two at most, to now being just the Tusken Raider part was three episodes and nothing really happened in there. And he's sitting there training the Tusken Raiders. We got to watch them learn how to drive the speeders and all these different things. There was a lot of things that just didn't need to be done. There's things that could have been cut out of that. And so we have an editing and pacing problem. And then, what that does is it disconnects you from the personality of the character, and it disconnects the audience from that character, because now we're not watching the person that we thought we were. And we don't know when there's an end in sight as to when that character is going to come back to being the character that we were shown, that we were sold to get into this show.
Yeah. Not to fault my next statement, basically, I feel like the Tusken Raider aspect of the story, I'm wondering too if it was heavily inspired by Temuera Morrison's cultural aspects, his ethnic background. I wonder if he spoke with Rodriguez or the writers to say, you know what, let's add a little bit of this to Boba Fett. You know, he does his, his Maori dance on set, mm-hmm. and he's doing his training with the Tusken warrior there. And, mm-hmm. I feel that stuff was beautifully done. I'm not sure if it was needed, like you said, in this series, about this character in particular, especially at this point in his existence.
I think it was cool that they brought it in. And I think it's cool that they tied it to Boba, because I think, you know, one of the things that helps us to appreciate a character is more about the character, getting that backstory, getting the information about him. And so to being able to see it is fine. But again, it's an editing and pacing problem. So did we need the information? Yes. But did we need, you know, 10 minutes of that information, or a 30-second snippet of them doing this and a 30-second snippet of them doing that? And you know, and so it's all about how it's packaged and presented at that point.
Yeah. You talk about pacing. I think there has been a pacing issue with a lot of the Star Wars shows as of late. And I don't know what that is, whether it's related to COVID restrictions, whether it's related to their time schedule. It's interesting. You know, we are a couple of months away from the newest Star Wars, which is the Acolyte. I think we're also supposed to be getting
Skeleton Key.
Skeleton Crew.
Crew, yes, sorry.
You know, soon. So we'll see what happens. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see if there are any pacing issues. I think, the Ahsoka show kind of suffered a little bit too from it. I think I was puzzled as to the time length of the episodes in Book of as well, where every other series has at least a 50-minute episode. We were still being treated to like half an hour, sometimes even less, 22 minutes plus credits. It was frustrating, especially like you said, when nothing Agreed. Was happening. And, all you got was him, you know, training with the Tusken. They needed to move the story along. And I think a lot of people kind of fell off because of that.
Agreed. But, we were getting 30-minute filler episodes, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you know, with the advent of Star Wars on the small screen, you really have to kind of ramp it up. You know, George Lucas was experimenting with Star Wars on the small screen when he was doing the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. He obviously wanted to be able to create the type of special effects that he was doing on the big screen and bring it down to the small screen. You know, we did get, you know, the first Star Wars television show was Mandalorian. That was received with you know, various degrees of success throughout the fandom. I almost feel like they really should bring George back as a consultant to kind of wrangle some things in. I know they've got Dave Filoni on board. Hopefully, you know, he'll use the knowledge that he's attained as a young Padawan learner of George's when they were together. So that should be interesting. But I think going into the new series, The Acolyte, I'm very curious to see how the pacing is for that show. It has to improve, I would want to say. I'd hope, anyways.
I would think so. I think what we're seeing, and I think it was better during the Ahsoka series than what we saw in season 3 of The Mandalorian, even.
Oh, yes.
You know, season 3 of Mandalorian had some pacing issues, and there was, I think what they were trying to figure out is when to put on the gas and when to let off a little bit. And the problem with that is, like you're talking about Star Wars on the small screen, is that you have to have the foot on the gas a little bit more, because we have these smaller, you're not watching a two and a half hour movie where you can have a little bit slower part in the story. You have, if you're going to have a, you know, your basic episode should be about, in my, this is my opinion, you know, you've gotten people used to expecting a 40 to 50 minute episode at minimum, should be 40 minutes before you get to credits. And so in that 40 minutes, there needs to be story, there needs to be action, there needs to be something to hook you in the mouth and bring you back for the next episode.
Sure, yeah.
And if we're not doing that, then we're going to have a problem. But I do think that one of the things that Dave Filoni, or as I like to call him, Holy Filoni, hallowed be thy name. I do think one of the things he's very good at is connecting those dots and making sure that this connects to this, this connects to that. Prequels connect to the originals, to which connects to the sequels, which connects to the animated, which connects to the comics, you know, bring in this, bring in that. And I think he does a really good job of navigating those things. And I think we're going to see that more as we go through the Skeleton Crew, as we go through the Acolyte and whatever's coming next for Mandalorian. Now, if that means that we get a season 2 of the Book of Boba Fett, I think that's probably highly unlikely. Personally, but I do think that we'll see Boba in other places. And if we do, I think that we'll see him being used in a way that people are used to seeing Boba Fett, not what we saw in the series.
You know, I mentioned at the top of the show, my, you know, when I get distracted by thinking about the nonsensical character motivations of characters in these shows, it really throws me out of the loop. Towards the end, when they were on in Tatooine or Mos Vespa, whatever town they were in, Boba Fett and the Mandalorian were battling that large droidica droid, and they couldn't stop it.
Keep them on their heels. They're on the run.
They threw some grenades at it, didn't work because they were ray shielded. So Boba Fett says, you know what? I have an idea. I'm going to go back to Jabba's palace. And I've got the answer to go, destroy these, droids. The fact that he went back to the garage and grabbed a Rancor so he can ride into town and use the Rancor to destroy those droids instead of using Slave One, it was right there. right there, he said, you know what? I'm going to ride this this creature back to town and destroy these creatures. It's like it just didn't make sense to me. I think that was made more as a fan service, a huge fan service moment where people wanted to see Boba Fett ride a Rancor because that's what we played with when we were 7 years old, 8 years old. We put Boba Fett on top of the Rancor. And we just went to town, and to see him live action would have been so great, but it didn't make sense.
It didn't measure up in the... I did measure up. I had a whole problem with the Rancor climbing at the end of doing the King Kong thing on the top of the on top of the building. There's so many things about this series that I really do appreciate, and there are things, and I will, you know, when I go through my Star Wars rewatch, because basically what happens, I watch Star Wars from start to finish, and when I get done at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, I start right back at the beginning and go back all the way through movies, shows, you know, whether live action and animated. But when it's time to watch The Book of Boba Fett, I will happily watch The Book of Boba Fett. I will also happily complain about the things that annoy me. And one of those things that annoys me is the use of the Rancor. It was cool that, you know, to see the Rancor on the baby Rancor on screen. And it was cool to see that, you know, the Rancor was going to be in Jabba's palace. That could have been, and that should have probably been the end of the Rancor in the show. Having him ride it in when there were other ways to get rid of the droidica, would have been much more Boba Fett, shall we say.
Sure.
And like you said, the use of Slave One would have been a much better option to basically just create a divot in the ground where the droidica used to be. I didn't understand that either, but I thought, you know, one of the things that Star Wars has tried to do, George Lucas has always tried to do, you know, even back in... with, you know, we saw it a little bit in A New Hope. We saw a little bit in Empire. We really saw it in Return of the Jedi. And then we saw it even more in the prequels, was George trying to introduce humor into the shows. Jar Jar. Jar Jar. You know, so you get to the, and I really feel like him riding the Rancor in was A, fan service, and B, an attempt at introducing humor into the show and have a funny moment. Ha ha ha, look, we're going to have him climb up the wall, you know, top of the building and hang out like King Kong.
Right.
And yeah.
Didn't work for you, huh?
No, that was, I think it was Rotten Tomatoes. That was a 0% on freshness for me. So
yeah.
If I was Rotten Tomatoes, that's a 0% for that scene.
Wow. Yeah. So I guess we would both agree that the best part of Book of Boba Fett were the two episodes that he wasn't in. No, but again, you know, it's funny though, because I mean, we're giving crap to the show, but you know, I mean, I still like Boba Fett as a character, despite this series. I'm looking forward to, you know, like you said, hopefully bringing him back in another show, another way.
It's
always cool to see Boba Fett.
Absolutely. And now we have all these other characters that they've introduced that into live action that I want to see more of. I want to see more of Black Krasantan and what happens, you know, moving forward. Even though he could have died, I want to know what happened. I want to see more Cad Bane. Cad Bane to me is neck and neck with Boba as the coolest bounty hunter in Star Wars history. Fennec's pretty cool, but she's not Boba, and you know, sure. And Cad Bane's really cool, but he's also not Boba.
Right.
But you know, there we have in this show, we have three of the coolest bounty hunters, and the one that's probably the most feared is the one who didn't act like the bounty hunter.
Oh God. Yes. So true. You know? So true. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Clear out and take your hoodlum gang with you.
We'll be right back.
All right. Well, I'm glad we had this discussion, our revisit of the Book of Boba Fett with Tim from the FSF Popcast. How many stars would you give this out of five if you were to have to review it once again in 2024? When did the show come out? 2020?
It was 2022, I think. 21 or 2022. Yes.
Yeah. So a couple of years later, how would you rate this out of 5 stars?
Well, if I was writing a review article, as I do, I would probably give this a 3.25 out of 5, because although there are things that blatantly and obviously drive me absolutely just wacky crazy, there are also things that I absolutely love about this show, and there are things that I think that are, from a character building standpoint, are absolutely essential, just out of pace and a little too much of it.
Sure. I think your rating is fair. I would also probably give it 3.25 Vespas in my review there. But wasn't too crazy with the Tusken found family story arc. I did enjoy a lot of the new characters that we talked about. They were really great. Cad Bane was a bright center to the series, along with some of the other characters that we mentioned, Black Chrysantin, Gar Safwip. Cobb Vanth was really great. We did get a glimpse, again, more fan service, but we had, his name? Cammy and Luke's friends that live on Tatooine.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Cammy.
They were in the bar.
Some interesting takes. This series kind of did some interesting stuff. You know, there's funny because there's one aspect that they kept showing, a little bit of a dream sequence with young Boba Fett from I think from Attack of the Clones, maybe, I think, when he wakes up on Kamino and it's raining and he runs over to the window and he sees Slave One flying away, and every time you saw it, you saw a little extra towards the tail end. And I thought they were going to do something with that scene, but they just kept showing it, and then there was no payoff. It was just like, it was just him dreaming about the same thing over and over and over again, but we really got no explanation. It really meant nothing. And I think in the long run, a lot of this series was like that. There was a lot of check out Chekhov's gun, but I'm not going to show you, or we're not going to see, you know, what the results of, which was unfortunate. And I think, you know, a lot of it for me was empty calories. There was a lot of really cool looking things, but at the end of the day, it all didn't mean a hell of a lot for me. So, but like you said, you know, hopefully we'll see Boba Fett in some other venue, another show, another series, another movie, now that we know that Grogu is coming to the big screen. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the only way that this show bears merit moving forward is what they do with Boba's character from here. Do they show him jumping back in with Mando in the movie and helping to fight and do all those different things? That's going to be where this episode, or this series rather, will have payoff.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of the Scary Scuttlebutt Podcast. Why don't you tell the fine folks who have listened thus far where people can find you to say hello there.
Hello there. Well, you can come say hello there at www.fsfpopcast.com. That is our website. You can find all of our audio and video episodes there, which will link you right to our YouTube channel. There's you have links to our socials there, our Patreon page, where you find you'll get early access to all our episodes, plus some really cool behind the scenes stuff that you won't get anywhere else other than our Patreon channel. So, and we have very reasonable membership rates. You should check that out. Anyway, but yeah, FSFpopcast.com. That's probably the best place to find us. Or you can look me up on Facebook as just Tim Beisiegel.
Excellent. Excellent, my friend. Definitely go give those guys a follow and find them on all the socials. Interact with them because we like when people talk back to us. And what are your thoughts on the Book of Boba Fett? If you want to leave us a voicemail on the Scare of Scuttlebutt hotline, give us a call at 773-234-8659 and we'll play and react to it in an upcoming show. Check it out. Excellent. I am Ro. That is Tim. Remember to grab your sunscreen because it's always sunny on the sands of Tatooine. And that's the Scuttlebutt.
Listener, just a reminder that the podcast you just heard is a proud member of the Red 5 Network family. Red 5 Network offers you a great variety of shows you'll be sure to love. So the next time you're itching for quality content,
make sure you head over to Red 5 Network.
You'll find this podcast along with a whole lot more.
All wings report in.
It's the Red 5 Network.